This is the Inno the Buzz podcast, helping smart businesses be even more innovative.
Hi, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Welcome to episode number 69 of the Inno the Buzz podcast, designed to help smart businesses with an interest in innovation become even more innovative. In this episode, my guests are Deany and Dean McPherson of Paperform. Paperform is a web platform that enables anyone to create beautiful and functional online forms or product pages quickly, intuitively, and to brand them as they like, and all that without having to know a line of code. We talked about really understanding your customer needs, addressing that need with a product that serves your customers well, and providing an awesome user experience. I'm sure you'll enjoy hearing much more directly from both Deany and Dean. So without further ado, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Deany and Dean McPherson of Paperform. I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to have with me today on this episode of the InnovaBuzz podcast, all the way from Sydney in Australia, Deany and Dean McPherson, who are the co-founders of Paperform. Now, Paperform is a web platform that enables anyone to create beautiful and functional online forms, but you can also use it to create actually full landing pages, and we'll talk about that a little bit during the interview, and brand the forms as you like without having to get into any coding. Now, I've been using Paperforms for about 6 months now, and I'm really impressed with it. And also, I'm really impressed with your development of new features and the way you listen to your customers in driving the development of new features. So I'm really looking forward to learning more today. So welcome, Deany and Dean. It's a privilege to have you on the InnovaBuzz podcast.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having
us. Thanks, Evan. It's great to be here.
And it sounds like you've already you're spot on with what Paperform does, and especially our emphasis on ensuring that we have excellent support and how important that is to the product itself.
All right. Now, before we kind of talk some more about Paperform and innovation and where that's headed, let's find out a little bit about your background. So what were some of the key milestones on your journeys to founding Paperform?
So a bit about our background. My background is as a web developer. And I've been involved in the Sydney startup community for maybe the last 3 or 4 years, working kind of in early stage startups, mostly just in a technical capacity as an employee. So my background, coming up to Paperform was really, I suppose, the technical side of things.
And we both come from a bit of a funny background in that we're actually arts originally. So I'm a bit more of a history focus initially, and Dean's actually logic. We found ourselves moving into the tech space in different roles. I worked in the cultural sector, and I have a passion for tech and culture, and then ended up finding a role at Google in Google Arts and Culture as a project manager for Australia and New Zealand. And so we found ourselves in a very complementary position where we both had a different skill set, but we were able to bring those together quite well for Paperform. And we found this gap in the market literally because our friends and the community was coming to Dean and asking him to build them bespoke forms. And we just knew that, you know, there was a void that needed to be filled and a product that needed to be built for people to be able to have forms that they really have ownership of, and particularly for their brand. So we have a bit of a fun arts background that's quite well in getting to where we are today.
Yeah. I saw that on your LinkedIn profile, Deany, that, you know, coordinator of the Google Arts and Culture Program for Australia and New Zealand for a while, and also other arts-related roles or roles in the arts industry. And I thought, that's an interesting background. So thanks for sharing that. So what you kind of alluded to it a little bit there, but why do you do what you do?
So we build pay per form because, we found this hole in the market and obviously thought we could build a solution that would really benefit a lot of people and a lot of businesses.
And we're incredibly passionate about, the community, and also we genuinely just love what we do. So, you know, Dean, if he wasn't working at his day job when we started out, because we moved, this is a bootstrap business, so we moved from being in these day jobs into our completely our own self-sufficient business. And so Dean, you know, naturally he spends a lot of his time at work, working, programming, and then coming home, and he would continue to program because it excited him. And he was always, I shouldn't talk in the past tense, because he always, you know, the latest what's going on. And for me, my big passion is it's product, but in sync with partnerships and talking directly to users, and not just end users, but our direct users. So what I have found working with Google Arts and Culture, and what I was really passionate about was, you know, we made tools and facilitated these cultural institutions and different organizations to be able to really show their assets and their identity to their end users. And I think one of the things that I've found frustrating in products in general is that a lot of the times the product focuses only on the end user rather than really empowering the direct user to be able to speak to their own clients. So we found ourselves really impassioned to create this product between us. Dean was really excited to build it, and I was excited to work with our users, you know, like you, Jürgen, to be able to say, what is it that you want out of this product? Yeah. How can we make that happen for you? And the fulfillment that comes with building something like that is incredible.
And just, I suppose, complementary to that is like personally, as a developer, I love making tech, but that really comes to its full fruition when you make the right solution for the right people. And getting a good solution into people's hands is just really satisfying to know that, you know, something that we've built kind of from the ground up is being used by, you know, thousands of people all over the world to, you know, save them time and money and improve their lives and their business. Like, that's just a really satisfying feeling.
Yeah.
I was just listening to someone talking about, you know, helping more people, and that's the secret to actually making more money rather than focus on making the money. It's about how many people do you help and how well do you help them. So
it's funny, we were talking about this just a day ago or so, because, you know, it's easy, especially today, when you look at all the stuff that's out there to help you with marketing, with acquisition and all these sorts of things that are incredibly important. But the bent is always on providing support for the benefit of your acquisition, but pretty much with the focus being on the product itself benefiting. Whereas for us, our focus is really on making sure the customers are genuinely happy, our users are happy. That, as you said, that automatically translates into a good product and sales.
That's it.
That's right. And
and
you and I have chatted quite a bit on the, because you're live on the Paperform website chat, right, D&E?
Yeah. We made a conscious decision to really take support into our own hands, and we're holding off outsourcing that at all costs at the moment, because it's invaluable for us to have that direct line of communication.
Now, how long have you been going? Is it November 2016 you started?
Yeah, that's about right. So, I mean, in terms of product development, we started making it mid last year.
Yeah.
And then up till, I think we released on beta list, it was either late October or early November. So kind of product history-wise, we put it up on beta list just to see whether, I mean, obviously we kind of built something that I thought was pretty useful, but you don't really know until you give it to people and let them have a play. So product hunt was kind of our beta list was our initial test of whether it resonated with people, and we had quite a good response out of that. In fact, our demo deal that we ran in December came out of our beta list users.
It was a fun, the whole launch experience was a fun necessary. Like, we had to get everything done all of a sudden for a particular point in time. So we were released in beta. That was going well, and we had planned to launch quite soon after, 3 or 4 months later. But when we had AppSumo contact us, we set a date for 7th of December. And that meant that we had a deadline. And I think that was very good for us, even though it was much sooner than we had planned. It meant that we had to go full steam ahead, put our, you know, heads down and get everything done in preparation for the 7th of December when we launched. So we actually launched as the part of the AppSumo deal.
Mm. Yeah, and I think that's where I jumped on board too. And I probably sat on it for a couple of weeks because I was pretty busy in that time. Yeah. But then I started playing with it over Christmas and I thought, wow, this is pretty interesting. Straight away, I realized that you could actually build complete landing pages using the form builder, and started playing with it there. And then I had some immediate needs where, you know, I'm kind of a Gravity Forms user from way back. So I had some immediate needs where I thought Gravity Forms is actually, on one case it was a bit of overkill, on the other case it was actually not that easy to do what I needed. So I took a serious look at Paperform and haven't looked back since.
Well, that's what we love to hear. I think that's the whole point, right? I mean, people say things are easy and fast to use, but to actually create something that does that is a whole other ball game. And something that, you know, that with Paperform, as you said, it's somewhere not even in between a landing page. It is a landing page and it is a form. And, and the idea is that you're able to engage people with this rich text and really show who you are. And then, as part of that process, capture details, whatever details, or sell a product.
Yeah, that's right. And just recently you've enabled embedding of videos on the form, basically, which, you know, I think that could be a bit of a game changer for forms, because I'm not aware that there are any other form system where you can directly embed the video. I mean, you can put them on a landing page, obviously.
Yeah, no. So that was, it was obviously a no-brainer for us. So just rewinding a bit, a lot of the forms that I was asked to make before I made Paperform from, you know, friends and family were, say, like an event registration form where you want to have a bit of information about your event. You obviously want to have your form itself and you want it to capture more information than just this person bought a ticket. So that's really kind of what spawned this idea of, well, why can't you just have a page that, you know, has engaging copy, has video, and but also can kind of capture some more complex information?
Hmm. I think we probably didn't see exactly how much of a game changer video embeds were until we really launched, because one of the aims that we had with launching with AppSumo, going from beta to launching on the 7th of December with our promo deal, was to launch with absolutely the core minimum product that we could have, with the intention of building the product based on what users wanted. And it's not really necessarily a traditional way of doing it, because users can sometimes get it very wrong. But, you know, a lot of the times they know what they want and they know what they need. And video embeds came up a huge amount. And I can't think of any other form builder that actually has video embedding.
Mm, yeah, I'm not aware of any either. As I say, normally you'd stick the form on a landing page and you'd put your video on the same landing page, but that's slightly different. Yeah. You know, I'm thinking of, you know, having a pop-up form, because I'm using lots of pop-up forms now in various websites that we're building, and Paperform is really ideal to do that. And having a video come up as part of that pop-up would be just awesome, I think.
Yeah, I think that would work quite well.
Mm. The other thing, of course, is that, you know, you've got it set up to very easily connect to Stripe as a payment gateway. And I see, does it connect to PayPal as well? Because I tend to use Stripe more.
Yeah, so we've had Stripe since the beginning, and we actually, I think 2 weeks ago, released Braintree support.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Braintree is a PayPal subsidiary. Mm. So it kind of comes with PayPal support. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, you know, that's another thing. I think that it's a lot easier in Paperform to do that than in most other form builders, because you've basically got to have something else a plug-in or some connector set up separately?
Yeah. So a lot of the, I suppose, ideology behind how we've kind of designed and built Paperform is to really focus on making that creation experience kind of as fun and quick and as seamless as possible, so that you're not thinking about what's the next kind of field that I'm gonna add to my form and dragging it slowly across and then opening up the like a lot of the existing form solutions kind of have this very formulaic, very old way of making forms, which is fine. Like, you can make a form with it, but it may not be the fastest or best way of doing that.
Or most beautiful way of doing it either. And one of the challenges that we face that we're always thinking about is, you know, how do we integrate something like payments and something that you have to connect to an existing gateway or service, whatever, and make that something that can be used on an individual form but is accessible to all of your forms if you need to. You know, how do you integrate? We just released, we focused on payments a lot in the last couple of weeks. So we've released recurring payments and submission, Braintree, PayPal, multiple currencies and also multiple accounts as well. And in all of that, what we really had to think about was how do we allow our users to very easily connect to those accounts and then access what they want from those accounts for particular forms. That's really led the way that we think about the product's shape and architecture.
Yeah, and I think that recurring payments one is going to be a big one too, because I know I've got quite a few clients that have that as a need, and we've been kind of doing a sort of a hack to try to do that. But so it's easy to do in paper form. Now we've just got to figure out how to get the information back into the CRMs.
Yeah, that's right.
Hmm.
And direct integrations are coming up on our roadmap for the future as well. At the moment, you know, it's wonderful. We love Zapier, having said
that. Yeah.
Just incredible. And we're really excited. Actually, again, really recently, a couple of weeks ago, we went global on Zapier. So we'll be creating more and more Zap templates there.
Okay. So that, I saw that notification. Does that mean it's kind of public, is it? Because I was already using the Zapier integration before.
It doesn't actually make too much of a difference to our existing users, because anybody who was on Paperform was put through a flow where they were invited to use kind of a private Zapier app.
Oh, okay. That's
by going public, it means, for one, if you actually go to zapier.com, you can find us. But two, we can also pre-create these what's called Zap templates, which just means we can have like a pre-existing connection set up to say you want to connect your form to MailChimp. You can click this template, and you only need to fill out the bits that are relevant to your form. You don't need to kind of create the entire Zap from the ground up.
Yeah, I got it. So yeah, that's the Zap book, is it? Users kind of put in templates, basically.
Yeah.
And
That's been really amazing. But in the long run, we really do want to have a whole bunch of direct integrations to make it even easier.
Yeah. Yeah, that definitely, don't want to be totally reliant on a third party. I heard an interesting discussion today about that very thing, about, you know, building your whole automation sequences around Zapier, and at some point you kind of lose track of what's actually happening in the workflow, and if something breaks, it's hard to track down.
Yeah, that's it. It's a great implementation, but it shouldn't be your system.
Yeah, that's right. All right, speaking of templates, you've got, how many templates have you got in the system? Because there's a lot there, isn't there?
Yeah, it's getting there. I mean, I'm definitely love to be comprehensive. That's one of my favorite things in life, is to cover all bases. So in my opinion, I would love to have a lot more. At the moment, you know what? I actually don't know exactly how many. We probably have over 30 now.
Yeah, about 30.
But our aim is to, you know, have a whole lot more than that. And at the moment, what we're doing is going through, we've decided to go through industry and say, you know, what are the key industries that we know are currently making use of Paperform? And how can we first, you know, make sure that they've got what they need? and create, you know, for 10 to 15 templates if we can across their industry, and then move on to the next industry, so that people not only have, you know, very logistical and pragmatic forms, templates that they can use, but also have visual inspiration for their particular industry when it comes to marketing and acquisition themselves.
Mm.
So, yeah, I really enjoy template creation, and it's an incredible, it's something, again, that we're looking at outsourcing at the moment. I think it'll be great to have a different perspective on it, but we have pushed back on outsourcing that at the moment, because when you're creating a template, you actually get the complete user experience. We know how our users feel, what their frustrations are, if there are any with the product and all that sort of thing. So.
Yeah, yeah. That's good. Yeah, I've got probably half a dozen tabs open here, actually, of different templates that I need to bookmark, because I thought I might have a use for that, or a design variant of that.
I'm writing down bookmark as we speak.
So you mentioned looking into outsourcing of certain aspects of the business. How big is the team now? Is it just the two of you, or...?
Yeah, you're talking to Paperform.
Yeah, we're a lean machine. We love it. But I guess because of that, we do rely heavily on the stack.
Yeah. And in terms of users, you mentioned thousands.
So I think our current user base, I haven't actually checked it in a while, but...
It's around 4,000.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive for 6 months, or less than 6 months.
We're really excited about it.
Yeah.
Challenging, and our users are great. Like, one of the things that I love is, even when they do have a frustration or a question about something, even if you can hear that frustration, they're incredibly patient, and they explain it in most of the time in such a way that you can have the conversation.
Mm.
We've had a really positive experience so far.
Yeah, we haven't had anyone at all really that's been nasty, which is quite good
for support. It's quite surprising.
A great bunch of 4,000 people.
Yeah, well, that's good. You've attracted the right sort of clients then. But I think from a user's perspective, it's good to have like an instant response there on the site. I mean, I think I've probably half a dozen times I've asked something. It's either something that I wanted to do and couldn't because I didn't know how, or it was something that wasn't yet a feature. But then, you know, there's always, like, you've always come back and said, well, what would you do with that feature? And, you know, I had the feeling that you're very open to the idea and taking things on board. And
definitely.
I think there was one where, just trying to think, there was one where you actually shared with me, what was on the roadmap. And you said, this is on the roadmap and here's where it is. And it was kind of like third or fourth down the list. Which, you know, it was top of mind for me right then and there, but I saw that it was important for your overall development, which is pretty impressive that you shared, you know, that level of detail and so openly.
Yeah, it's a two-way street. So setting expectations for us is really important. I'm flabbergasted when businesses don't do this, especially SaaS businesses. You have an opportunity with your users to, if you know what the roadmap's going to be and there's no reason why you can't share it with them, it makes sense to be able to show them what your plans are for the product, and because it becomes an investment for them. They see where the product's headed. It's something that they invest in, that they believe in with you. They really start to go on that journey with you, and it's really good for us as well, because it means that if the question comes up, there's somewhere to, like you said, to be able to point someone. And if it's not on the roadmap, we get to have the conversation about why they need this. And when you're having those conversations, you might have one person who wants a feature and therefore it's not really feasible to make that a priority, or you have to question whether or not you'll implement it. But if you're having these individual conversations, and you automatically end up finding out yourself which are the most needed features and wanted features.
So by doing support directly ourselves, we see a lot of the patterns of conversation come up again and again, where somebody goes, you know, it's not just features, it's like, how do I do this? You know, then all of a sudden we know that the flow around that process is obviously not obvious, or that we need to improve documentation there. But also, obviously, if 10 people come to you and go, can you embed a video? and you kind of know that embedding a video would be a really nice thing to have, because they've gotten to the stage where they've gone, I want this, I'm looking for it, and I'm actually going to put in the effort of asking somebody on a support channel for that feature.
Yeah, I think that's great. I think that there's a real lesson there, and I think that might be a big contributor to, you know, having that community that you mentioned earlier that is so supportive.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they are, like, we really do, we feel supported in building the product, and ultimately our end goal is, yeah, I mean, of course, it's lovely to have revenue, but our end goal is to have a product that we're proud of and that really fills a need for people. And when you see that being done, it's just the best feeling.
Mm. So how do you go about growing your community, growing your sales right now? What's your process?
That's a great question.
So we had this experience, right, where it was really amazing. I cannot recommend highly enough, if you have an opportunity to contact AppSumo and launch a deal with them. For us, it was the best way to launch, because we had this group of beta testers who were amazing, but beta is very theoretical. So you have people who are posing questions or asking for features in, you know, this could be good, or this would be nice. It's very different to having all of a sudden thousands of users saying to you, I need this feature today for my business. You know, it really puts into perspective what the features are that you need to have. So we had this boom with AppSumo launch, where we had all these users, and not just people buying the deal, but then after that, obviously the publicity continues and people keep going to site and they, you know, they sign up, and then after a couple of weeks when they start to build forms, they see the value in it. And after their trial's over, a lot of them do make the decision to stick around, which is really encouraging for us. But at the moment, we're at a place where that hype from AppSumo is, you know, naturally dissipating. So now it's about, you know, finding the right acquisition channels. And it's something that it's probably the biggest challenge for us at the moment. We're still figuring out what the biggest acquisition channels for us are.
Yeah, it's also like, I come from a development background, and Dionne comes from kind of like an admin partnerships management background. So marketing is definitely neither of our wheelhouse. So it's something we're kind of learning on the job.
Yeah, it's the one area where we are admittedly a bit weaker, and we're figuring out. So we sat down and came up with a couple of marketing. I mean, there's so much potential out there. I think that's one of the things I find really overwhelming, is there are so many acquisition methods to try, and because you have to find the right one, it just takes time to sit down, come up with the particular strategies that you're doing, and then implement them
and test them.
Yeah. So. Yeah, at the moment, our acquisition methods are varied. Did you want us to go into detail about them, or?
Oh, yeah, sure. Whatever you're comfortable sharing.
Yeah, so, like, I mean, we're working on starting a blog, which is more around a way of creating engaging content for people in industries that would be interested in Paperform. So that's really just providing good value content to people in that industry, and like long term, that'll have obviously SEO benefits to site, as well as you know, good content's just good for sharing as well. That's obviously going to take a little bit of time to start actually returning results, just because that's the nature of blogs, kind of content marketing. What else are we up to at the moment?
So our industry's push, like making sure that we're providing the proper resources for different industries, has been part of marketing. And the way that it works for us is that, you know, we reach out to our current users and say, you know, hey, you're from this industry. How are you using forms? What kind of forms are you creating? And we create templates based on that, create a blog post, and kind of put together, not kind of, we put together a resource kit. And that includes also a use case video or an inspirational video to get people, you know, who don't have no idea. They want to create a form or a landing page or both, and they don't know where to start. And so this is inspiration for them. So we package that together and then, you know, market that across our social media accounts and also to our current users. So they've been, I guess, the inbound marketing tools that we've used.
Yeah. And then we've released a referral program, yeah, which has been starting to work quite well, I think.
Yeah, it'll be good to sit down and figure out exactly why, but it seems in the last couple of weeks in particular, it's really started to pick up, even though we launched it a month and a half ago.
Yeah, it was a while ago.
And we're currently working on an affiliate program, so we're in beta testing for that, and we'll see how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
Affiliates, we're very cautious of. We really want to do it, and we have some really supportive users who want to try it out. We're just being very careful because it's early days for us. We want our brand to be very clear, and so when you do an affiliate program, you have other people representing you.
Yeah, that's right. It's kind of stuff that you need to be on top of, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and you also have an agency account, right? Because that's what I'm using at the moment is an agency account, which is great because I can then separate out the forms for individual clients and actually give them access to their particular forms and the data that's then stored in the system.
Yeah. Yep. So agency, like ongoing... It's not quite an acquisition strategy in that it'll generally be a single account in terms of how it's built. But unlike the lifetime deal that we gave to our AppSumo users, for most users of agency, there's kind of ongoing costs associated with users as they add more users to their system.
Mm.
So it's definitely a scaling revenue model there, but not necessarily an acquisition strategy.
I guess it is acquisition in that you're then providing I don't want to say superior, but like, you know, a different kind of model of your product that's more catered towards someone, you know, who needs multiple users, who needs more custom formatting. And that's one of the, in general, with Paperform, we're moving towards more formatting and much more, even more customizable forms. Like it's only going to get better. But particularly for agency, so bringing in HTML and CSS for that will be a big win. So it's about saying, you know, we have these core, in terms of acquisition, we've acquired these users on our pro tier, and by launching agency and making it available and inviting people to upgrade, you know, it's a form of acquisition that you're moving them on to an even better version of the product for them and for their needs.
Mm. Yeah, well, it'd be exciting to see some more styling options provided that'll really blow it out,
make it
real useful. Yeah, but I guess there's a fair challenge in that to keep it all tight and manageable.
Yep, that's my challenge.
No,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, speaking of challenges, is there something that you really worry about that keeps you awake at night?
America. our core market's in America. I've got to get up at night. No, that's not it keeps me up literally, but not that. I think progress for me, I mean, I'll let you answer that personally, Dean, but for me, it's not even a fear or anxiety. It's an excitement or an unsettledness that I have all these ideas, I have all this stuff that I want to do, and I want to do it yesterday. And so I have my own methods of just completely clearing my mind so that I can get some sleep, because otherwise I would just be thinking about, you know, planning in my head. it's so exciting. If I had to pick something that made me a bit anxious, it's definitely growth, but I think that goes hand in hand with progress. You know, you never want your product to be stale. And I think that's probably what makes me the most anxious, the idea of a product becoming stale forward. So that's what keeps me up. What about you?
Well, I sleep pretty well. yeah. I mean, as a business, I suppose our biggest priority for the next 6 months or so is really, well, for one, just getting through our public roadmap of features that we've kind of said we're going to deliver. But that's not, doesn't really keep me up. I think it's more just continuing to grow the business. There is, like Dionne said, there's just lots of very different things to do. But I don't think there's any one thing.
And it's sustainability, I think, not I think, it's as you grow, there's always that tension where you need to support, you need to figure out your automation, grow the stack, but also, you know, at some point we will need to outsource aspects of the business like design and elements of support. So, you know, you're thinking about the fact that you need to grow to be able to support that into the future. And that's a financial worry, you know. I'm naturally, this is really weird, but financially minded. So I actually enjoy bookkeeping and I enjoy knowing exactly what's going on with the accounts. And so in my mind, I'm thinking about how do we grow this business really sustainably? And for us, we didn't want to go into any funding, external funding. We were really keen on having a bootstrap business. For us, that proves that the business really works from the very beginning, that it is sustainable. Pressure on us to make sure that we can pay, paying our own salaries is a really important part of that. And it's hard work. You kind of, at the moment, you look out there and you see all these amazing, sexy stories about people getting millions of dollars of funding to work on their product. And you see these flashy people, who've probably got a lot of makeup on for their photographs as I did. But the reality is that you're tired a lot of the time and you're working crazy hours. And it's because you need to work towards sustainability if you're bootstrapping, which is what we did.
Mm. Yeah, that's an interesting point because, you know, you see a lot of people that do get lots of funding and obviously they get that because the people with the money believe in their ideas. But then, you know, is that sustainable? And what happens if it does fall over? Because then if you've bootstrapped and it kind of falls over, you haven't risked all that much than if you had several million dollars in debt.
Yeah, it's true.
There's this funny thing about taking funding though where, you know, statistically you're actually probably more likely to fail
yeah.
than the actual stat if you take funding. And it's not necessarily, you know, that taking funding's a bad thing.
Yeah, funding can be a great thing.
But I think for a lot of tech businesses, well, a lot of startups, receiving a lump sum of money doesn't teach you how to manage that well as a business. So, you know, it's very easy to take on costs as a business and not be able to, I suppose, control your spending. Like you kind of have to when you're bootstrapping because it's all input output as we're concerned.
The idea of virality, like the idea that we could boom very, very quickly is actually probably, now thinking back to that question, is something that would scare me a bit more than others because I really like the idea of growing, not slowly necessarily, but sustainably. And part of that is because we're so community focused. Like it would be, if we had a couple of million dollars and we could do all this stuff, we could move really quickly, but would people be left behind in that? Would our community be left behind in that? And that matters to us. So, you know, our primary goal is to be able to cover our incomes. And sure, one day maybe we'll have the opportunity to have a greater impact globally, and that would be amazing. But our you know, I guess short-term goal is to be sustainable for our current staff base, which is Dean and I, and then whatever outsourcing we have, and just continue to support our users well. And hopefully that will lead to continued growth.
Mm. Yeah, it's a great philosophy. Now, you mentioned kind of getting organized for, you know, bringing other people on board, whether that's outsourcers or whether that's, partners. What are you doing to prepare for that? Are you kind of documenting your processes and building systems in the back end, like support systems and so on?
So Dionne documents everything.
He just laughed at me then. You couldn't see it.
she's a chronic documenter. In terms of our general everyday processes, we have a lot of that documented already. I'm a big believer in, like, I suppose it's the techie in me, but if I've got a simple process that I can spend 2 hours and build something that will automate that process, then I'll do that over hiring because that just makes sense to me.
He will, you know, never talk about this because he's a pretty humble guy, but he's an incredible dev. He really is. If there's something, especially with me, so a great example of this is we have been using Intercom for our support. And one thing that they didn't have was an autoresponder. So it meant that because our core market was in America, when we went to bed, I still get up. It's almost like I've got a business baby. I still get up a couple of times a night because it's important to me. It's important to talk, especially when that's the core market at the moment. But, you know, getting up a couple of times a night is different to being able to go to sleep and worrying about, people knowing and setting the expectation that we're not available at that particular point in time. And even though Intercom has a thing that's like, oh, average time to respond is a couple of hours or whatever it might be, not having something that's specifically, hi, I'm not here right now, is very different. And I was frustrated they didn't have this feature and I asked them about it. And they're thinking about bringing it in, but a bit later on. And Dean was like, well, I can make that for you. And sure enough, within a day or something, he built me an autoresponder for Intercom. I think that's a great example of where we can automate something.
So that would have been a case where, you know, we probably would have needed to hire somebody in the US time zone sooner rather than later because, you know, it was obviously negatively impacting our sleep.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
But we were able to push that back. And it's things like that, obviously when it comes to, if I had to give any words of advice to not do something yourself, hire an accountant and hire a lawyer. That's something that you really should rely on the professionals for. From the get-go, that they were no-brainers for us. So we have an accountant, we have a lawyer. I do bookkeeping. There's the very unglamorous side of business, which is all that stuff, which I try and do a lot of. But in the future, I think we'll be looking towards outsourcing design and support as well.
Yeah, well, there's a very important message there, isn't there? There's focus. Well, two messages, really. It's kind of focus on what you're good at and do that well, and then, you know, make sure that the things that you're perhaps not qualified to do, and particularly critical things like legal and financial, get the specialists to deal with that for you.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah, that's it.
For sure.
Yeah. And I'm fascinated you mentioned that building the autoresponder for essentially an online chat and support system, because I've been playing with several of those and most of them don't have it, which to me is a bit astounding.
There's one that does have it.
I can't remember what it's called.
Oh, that's a
Subject
shame.
Response or reply. User reply.
User engage. I recommend checking them out. We haven't used them ourselves yet, but they look like they provide a very good holistic service, especially if you're very happily stuck in Sydney. User base is overseas.
Yeah. Drift is what I'm using at the moment, which it's got an autoresponder thing, but the problem with Drift is it doesn't actually notify you, which is weird.
Doesn't notify you of what?
Well, if I get somebody on the website, send me a message, and I'm not actually on the website itself, it doesn't actually notify me. It'll send me an email at some point.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So, I'm thinking to myself, well, that's not a live chat.
Yeah. Is anybody from Drift listening? You know what to
fix. All right. Maybe I should get them on the podcast at some stage.
Have words.
Yeah. All right. Well, this has been fabulous, Deanie and Dean. I really appreciate your time. I think it's time we perhaps got onto the buzz, which is our innovation round. And it's designed to help our audience, who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field, with some tips from your experience. So I've got 5 questions and hopefully we'll get some really great answers from you that's going to inspire people to go out and do something awesome.
Let's do it.
So what's the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Look, I think the big thing around innovation is giving yourself permission to just have a go. like I think about working on products, I think about coming up with ideas. If you have an expectation that you're going to get it right the first time, then you're never even going to try.
Mm.
For me, at least, I suppose the big continual progress that I am making is that I'm more than willing to come up with 1,000 ideas that are really bad and then look for the gold out of it, then sit down and try and think of one good idea.
And I think that's had an incredible impact on me, like us working together now. And then also, you know, I have to admit working for Google as well, because it's so fast paced, is I'm a very cautious person and I like to have everything, you know, really have everything squared away before I start something. But, you know, working with Dean, and again, in a larger corporation as well, has taught me that there are certain things that you just need to push ahead with. If you have it, you know, 70-80% of the concept done, you just need to move forward. And for me, I think the most important thing for innovation is not letting something stop you because you're afraid. Like, you know, if you're scared to do something or apprehensive, hesitant, whatever it is, recognize that and be like, yeah, I'm not sure about this, but that's fine that I feel that way. It's just a feeling. I recognize that. I recognize the risk involved in something, but I believe in this and I'm going to push ahead, you know, with that. It's kind of corny, but I have this thing in my head where, you know, there's that moment in Home Alone where Kevin McAllister is, you know, about to start launching his attack on the robbers trying to get into his house. And he has this line where he says, you know, this is it. Don't get scared now.
Yeah, that's right.
Done. And I literally, like, it sounds really corny, but when something is really a big moment where you have to just push forward, I kind of say that to myself in my head. I psych myself up for it and just push ahead.
Mm, that's great advice. And so essentially it's kind of take action and recognize the fear, but do it anyway.
Yeah.
Mm. So I did a live Facebook live episode of the podcast last week for the first time. And I actually started off by saying, this is really exciting and scary at the same time, but we're doing it.
Exactly.
It's just jumping in. I mean, it's a huge thing. And like having started this business, it's funny having conversations with people that aren't in our industry. You get kind of two different stories. You get the, oh, that's really scary. And people that are risk averse going, I could never do that. And then you get people that go, well, that's awesome. It's exciting. It's fantastic.
There's no in between.
There's no in between. There's no like, you go one way or the other.
Hmm. Fascinating. All right. So what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas or new products? I think I might know the answer to this one.
So it's the same, isn't it? It's pushing ahead. But, you know, also I think the best thing that we've done, particularly with Paperform, is what we've discussed a lot today, and that's listening to your users.
Yeah.
Don't, if people say, you know, you need to build a product and I don't pay too much attention to their users, I would say personally, I don't think that's good advice. I think that's rubbish. With a SaaS product like ours, I want to be specific to what we're doing. And that's because we're providing a tool for people to be able to speak to their audiences and to engage with their audiences, and they know what they need for their business. And you have a responsibility. You know, it's funny, you have SaaS is, you know, software as a service, and people focus on the software part of it, which is great, but it's a service. And part of having a service to people isn't just providing them with a tool, it's being there for them, it's supporting them, it's admitting when something hasn't worked or you're having an issue, and, you know, having the graciousness and humility to talk to them as human beings rather than robots that use your product.
Yeah, that's great advice. And you prompted a thought in my mind, you know, around the lean startup model, where I guess you probably had a lot of input initially before you did the programming work, and you knew that there was a need out there for these forms or a service like that. But in terms of, you know, people having an idea that perhaps is more internal than anything else, and then spending a lot of time, effort, money, developing that idea and taking it to market rather than figuring out from their clients before they do all of that, as to whether they'd actually buy that, whether it would actually help them.
Yeah.
I mean, we're kind of in a fairly unique situation where like Deonny kind of said at the beginning, I program a lot, and I like building things kind of just for fun as
He does it for kicks. So
like there is plenty of reasons of why Paperform works as a business, but to say that, you know, we sat down and formally applied lean methodology probably is, you know, forcing a circle into a square. Like really, to a degree, we started building something before we knew whether what we were building exactly was what people wanted. And where I suppose more standard startup lean methodology has kicked in has been since we've actually taken it to say beta list, and then way more since we've launched it on AppSumo, where we actually got people in using the product and then have shifted the full experience of the product based off what people actually need. But I suppose the difference is we didn't really get to that MVP stage with a perfectly market validated idea, I don't think.
Hmm.
I think that's difficult though, because I think it was validated in that the reason we built it was because people kept coming to us for it.
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
It's not like we had this mad, you know, this idea out there. And that's part of I think innovation is ironically taking things that already exist around you and, you know, filling a need or turning them into something bigger and better. So if, you know, rather than sitting down and coming up with 10 completely new ideas every day, don't just do that, but have a think about what are the problem areas that you see in everyday life, and is there a way that you haven't thought about before that tech or whatever might be able to solve that problem? You know, we all work with people, we all work in different jobs or different community organizations or whatever it be that has issues. If something keeps coming up as an issue, there might be a business there.
Yeah, that's great advice. So.
I think the whole, like, there's that classic bit of advice of do just actually sit down and come up with 10 new ideas every day, regardless of whether they're good or bad. And I think there actually is something in it, not because the ideas themselves will be any good, because they probably won't be when you first start out, but it trains you to look for the opportunity. In the conversations that you have to go, oh, sorry, there's a problem you're having. How can we fix that?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think there's value in that exercise, but not as a primary product development tool. It's kind of more to develop that thinking muscle, if you like. And then, like you say, then you start to think, well, how do I come up with those ideas? Because I'm running out of ideas now from kind of just inside me. So what else? Oh, okay, somebody's having a problem with X, Y, Z. So maybe there's a way to tackle that.
Yeah, exactly right.
Mm. All right. So what's your favorite tool or system for improving your own productivity and allowing you to kind of do more of developing great add-ons or features in Paperform?
Mine is Dean. No.
Not at all.
Oh, look, there's a couple. A really good customer support software is really important. I won't particularly pinpoint one at the moment, because quite frankly, we're still looking for one that completely fills all of our needs.
Mm-hmm.
If you hear of one, that's really good. And other than that, I think it's funny. I've recently stumbled upon Mailshake. I don't know how many people have heard or used Mailshake before, but this really, it's seemingly simple, but it's probably absolutely not, like all good tools. A piece of software that allows you to automate. It's technically built for cold emailing, but because we're in Australia, you know, we can't use it for that. But also we use it to contact our users and continue to contact them in a very personal way. But when we're very time poor, it means that I can contact, you know, 20 people with a very similar question in one hit. In a personal way.
Yeah. Because it's kind of built for cold email, actually. It's it allows you to kind of write a single message to a lot of people, but then quickly go through and customize that message on an individual basis.
Yeah, I should have said that.
Just a bit of context of what that is.
Yeah, yeah. So that's been for me a massive time saver.
Yeah, I mean, for me, like, the big everyday tools are Trello. We use Trello for everything. Like,
Trello.
It's our notepad. It's our feature list, it's our bug list, it's our, you know, you name it, somewhere.
Zapier for product, like, you know, we were talking about direct integrations, they're really important. But in the interim, when you're getting to them, or if there's some that are, you know, products that are less used by users, but you need to integrate with them, Zapier is a massive time saver for Dean to not have to sit down and create all those direct integrations himself. It's huge.
Mm.
And then Xero, if you're, you know, for me, with in terms of bookkeeping, which every business has to do, unless you're outsourcing bookkeeping as well, Xero. I've used MYOB and QuickBooks, and I much prefer Xero to either of those.
Okay, that's good. So we'll link to all of those things. I must admit, I've heard Mailshake mentioned a couple of times recently, but I haven't looked into it myself yet.
They're quite new on the block.
Hmm.
Actually, I think they did an AppSumo deal themselves.
Yeah, they did.
Fairly recently. Just probably now we have it.
Yeah, that's
All right, we'll have a look at that. So what's the best way to keep a project or a client on track?
Trello. look, for me, it is no matter how crazy, hectic, busy, intense something is, for us it's usually a project. You know, our clients or users, our people, we're quite happy to communicate directly with them, and I think just being human and talking to them is part of good management, listening and MC is part of that. But in terms of the product itself.
Yeah, I mean, scheduling for product development is a notoriously difficult thing to do.
Yeah.
That's from my end of things, that's the hardest part about having a public roadmap is we're committing to timelines.
This is one of the
things that don't exist yet.
Yeah, quite honestly, this is one of the things that we have the most tension with. And it comes from our backgrounds. I come from working in a global cross-functional team where you have to have excellent documentation because it's the only way everyone's on the same page, and also the only way you can look back and see, because things move so quickly, how they moved. When you know, when you're in the moment, you don't see how that happens. And therefore, if you come to the same situation later on, you're able to go back, look at your documentation and say, what did we do right here? Let's do that again. And it's much faster the second, third, fourth time around. Whereas Dean comes from much smaller groups, you know, working,
teams.
I guess workplace teams. Yeah, thank you. Teams. Which means that our opinions on this can really vary. But for me, again, I'm a very comprehensive person. So the biggest thing for me is, no matter how crazy busy it is, to sit down and actually get the bird's eye view, get the whole picture of really what I want to achieve and what the end goal is, and figure out at least the core steps of how I want to get there, rather than just completely diving in. That's really important for me for projects.
Mm, great advice. All right. And what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Like individually or as a business?
Well, either or.
For me, they're the same.
Yeah. So I think, we are all individuals. I think the obvious answer is that you just need to be yourself. in terms of, you know, how do you differentiate yourself? I feel like in our industry, there's a whole lot of, you know, being like Steve Jobs, like, you know, you put on
the mask. Yeah, that's right.
You try and assume the personality of somebody that you look up to.
Or what you think it should be. This is what an entrepreneur looks like, you know, this is how they talk. This is, you know, everyone walks around talking like they're giving a TED talk or something. I don't think that that's...
Yes. So, like, for us, for example, being a married couple who run a tech business together and we are the sole employees of, that's been something that we didn't really see when we first started that as an identifier. But for a lot of our users, they've actually really engaged with that fact.
It's part of the brand
And now it's kind of associated with the brand. So, like, Christmas video, which was just the two of us
saying thanks
on a video. And I think just the fact that we're a couple as well as a business, you know, kind of ties our personal brand and the business's brand together. Yeah. And that's been a really unique and kind of beautiful thing.
And it's unintended, and it's who we are. And I think the moral of the story is be yourself, like Dean said, be yourself. And also don't compare yourself to others as part of that, like to fully go into detail with that. So, you know, Dean and I, even though we are, you know, obviously we're working partners and life partners, we are very different people in a lot of ways. It's funny, we often get to the same conclusion, but we get there really differently. And we are very headstrong, very opinionated and independent people. Fortunately, we have a huge amount of respect for each other. So the conversations are always great conversations, and we're more than happy to argue our points to see what the best way to go is, and to concede when we need to concede that we need to change something. But I think the best thing that you can do is not spend too much time comparing yourself to your competitors. People ask us the question a lot, you know, how are you different to your competitors? And I think it's a great question for us, for our business. We try and answer that. You know, I think we answer that really well now, especially because we know that our identity is creating customizable forms, forms that are really truly yours, that are beautiful, that are genuinely fast and easy to create. But the way that we got there wasn't by spending 90% of our time focusing on what other people are doing in our space. It was by saying, oh, we have a general idea of what people are doing. We know who the players are. We know that there's this gap, and we're going to focus on that gap and how we can do that best. If you spend your whole time comparing yourself to other people, you're going to psych yourself out. You know, there's a lot of massive competitors out there. You're going to be thinking that you need to be at a place where you don't need to be because it's too far in the future. You know, you're not a massive corporation yet when you're starting out. Focus on you, and don't spend too much time stressing, worrying, or comparing yourself to anyone else.
Yeah, that's great advice. And I think, you know, there's a trend coming through here. I think almost every second interview I do, if not more than that, tend to come up with a variant of, you know, don't just be yourself and don't try to be something different. But I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head there in terms of, you know, embracing your uniqueness on the one hand, but then also focusing on, you know, how you serve your audience, and not trying to be different to a big player or trying to emulate a big player. I mean, obviously you can look at what other people are doing and learn from it and perhaps even model from some of the things they're doing, but trying to be different than what your natural strengths and value is kind of a recipe for disaster, isn't it?
Yeah.
But as someone who designs products for a living, watching competitors in general, as a rule of thumb, causes more trouble than good. Because, you know, you take, for example, a competitor releases a new feature. Why they're releasing that feature, whether that feature makes sense for your product, how they've implemented it, they could all be very, very different things for your product. Whether you should even have that feature in your product, like that. We try not to watch our competitors too much at all. What we do,
we recommend our competitors where we don't, like, say for example, you have like a one question at a time style, like really conversational form. That's not what we're about. That's not what we do. We're happy to recommend Typeform for that.
But what we do instead is listen to our users. So if a user comes to us and says, "Hey, I want to do this. I come from this service and they do it like this," and it's obviously a hole in our product that needs to be filled, then we might say, okay, so how have they done it? And then look at to see whether that's a good fit for us. So I suppose we filter our impression of other products through our users.
Yeah, and that's kind of been a theme from the start of the interview, hasn't it?
Yeah,
which is great. Yeah. And, you know, I'd have to say, you know, without kind of trying to butter you up or anything, it definitely is my experience. So, you know, well done. So what's the future for you guys then, and for Paperforms or Paperform?
That's a great question. I was gonna make a joke about a crystal ball. the future for us in terms of product is making something that is allowing you to make forms that are even more customizable. And that means a range of things. It means more fonts. It means more styling options. It means, you know, CSS and HTML, as I mentioned before, a product that is even more versatile. And also alongside that, something that is even more shareable and compatible with, you know, our users being able to make it available to their clients, customers, audience, whoever it might be. So for the product, that will shape a lot of what we do for the future.
Yeah. Yeah, I think roughly what we've got is a framework of how we like to work with the product and what exactly the product will be in 2 years' time. We have no idea right now.
I wouldn't want to know what it, yeah, yeah. I think being a fair bit organic with Paperform is incredibly important to who we are.
Yeah. But yeah, so I think we'll just continue to walk that balance of being organic and in conversation with our actual users, as well as being obviously planned and organized and building a cohesive product. That's not just a licorice, all sorts of features sticky taped together.
And the other side of that's product, and the other side of it is community. And as part of community, you know, as I said before, we're in beta for looking at doing affiliates and you know, finding ways to foster the community. At the moment, we feel we have excellent relationships directly between us and our users, and now we want to start looking at, you know, how do we help our users to be a community in and of themselves. And then as part of that, really we're focusing on partnerships. So we have a few partnerships in the pipeline, even out, you know, with Zapier going public or global, whatever you want to call it, with Zapier. That involved direct communication with their team, and they were incredibly supportive and accessible to us, and building that relationship with them was a huge thing for us. We enjoyed it, and we want to see more partnerships. At the moment, one of the things that we're really excited about at the moment that's part of our philosophy, which is being excellent to one another, from Bill and Ted, be excellent to one another and party on, is partnering with NYU. So they have an intervention competition. So we're partnering alongside like MixMax and Trello actually to provide them with free tools to be able to
for the participants.
Participate in the comp.
That's so exciting.
So giving back is a huge part of Paperform, and it will continue to be. So we'll be releasing some stuff for not-for-profits in the future as well.
Great. Look forward to seeing more about that. So what's the number one piece of advice then you'd give to any business owner who wants to be a leader in innovation and who wants to kind of go down the similar sort of path that you've gone?
The number one piece of advice, I suppose, or experience that I would give anybody who's thinking of starting their own business or startup or taking that leap is no one's ever going to give you permission. And it's really obvious when you say it, but having taken that leap, I think that's something that if somebody had actually got through to me saying that, it would have been helpful, is that you kind of feel like, you know, we're forced through this system in lives where, you know, we go to school and then we go to university and then we get a job or we work for someone else. It's kind of this set path or trajectory of life, and no one's going to come up to you one day and go do your own thing. Take that leap, jump. Nobody's going to give you permission to do that. That's not to say people aren't supportive and people won't be supportive of that, but nobody's telling you to quit your day job, and nobody ever will. So I'd say my number one piece of advice is give yourself permission.
Yeah, and I'd say along the same lines, don't write yourself off because you might have come, you know, this is from my background, but because you've come from a different background. You know, initially I did a Bachelor of Ancient History and Archaeology, and, you know, I've always loved tech as, you know, just a general user in the public, but I didn't do it professionally or academically. But one thing that I never did was say to myself, because I have that background, I can't be involved in tech professionally. And if anything, it's been really beneficial because it's given me a perspective, I think Dean as well, a perspective on and an outlook on tech that is very unique. You know, I'm not forced into a cookie cutter way of thinking. So if what's stopping you is because you've written yourself off for whatever reason, because you don't come from a tech background, or you do and there's other stuff in your background there, don't.
That's great advice. All right. Well, thanks for your time today, Deanie and Dean. This has been really fantastic. I've made heaps of notes and learnt a lot. Where can people reach out and say thank you for all that you've shared with us today?
We're happy for you to directly contact us at support@paperform.co. So it's .co, not .com.
Yep, or you can hit me up on Twitter at Dean_McPherson.
Yeah, or follow us on Twitter at paperform_.
Okay, I'll have the links to all of that on in the show notes, along with all the tools and ideas that you've recommended as well. Finally, who would you like me to interview on a future InnovaBuzz podcast, and why?
I'd love to hear from Colin Matthews, who's one of the founders from Mailshake, which I mentioned before. I think I've just got a feeling that they are going to be doing some really incredible stuff, and they seem to be moving very quickly with what they're doing, and their product is just beautiful.
All right, Colin, we'll be sending you an invitation for the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Deanie and Dean at Paperform. Okay, so thanks very much, guys, for sharing your time and insights with us today on the InnovaBuzz podcast. I really appreciate this, and as I said, I've enjoyed it immensely and learned heaps. So I wish you all the best for the future of Paperform, and let's keep in touch. I mean, I'll probably be pestering you on the form every now and then.
Thanks, Jürgen. It's an absolute pleasure to be part of this, and we really appreciate being able to speak to your listeners.
Yeah, it was great to have you both on. Thanks.
Yeah.
Wasn't that another fascinating interview? I really enjoyed and also learned a lot from both Deanie and Dean. Now, I've been a Paperform user from the beginning and have interacted with both of them via their support portal, so it was great to meet them in person on the podcast. All the great ideas and tips that Dean and Deanie shared with us can be found at innovabiz.com.au/paperform. That is PAPERFORM. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.com.au/paperform. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with the team at Paperform there. We'd love you to leave comments on that post to tell us what you got out of this episode and what actions you'll take as a result. Deanie and Dean suggested that I interview Colin Matthews, one of the founders of Mailshake, on a future InnovaBuzz podcast. So Colin, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from me to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Deanie and Dean McPherson at Paperform. Now make sure you subscribe to the InnovaBuzz podcast on iTunes or Stitcher or Pocket Cast, whatever your favourite listening app is, so that you'll never miss a future episode. We'd love you to go to one of those apps and leave us a review as well, just to let us know how we're doing. If there's anything you'd like us to cover on a future podcast, questions you want answered, or even guests you'd like us to interview, then please send us an email at jürgen@innovabiz.com.au and we'll see what we can do. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, if you don't innovate, you stagnate. So think big, be adventurous, and keep innovating.